Welcome to the Love Cars on the Grid podcast, your global motorsport roundup with me, Tiffany Dell, and Paul Woodman.
Welcome to Love Cars on the Grid, your global motorsport podcast. On today's pod, we try and work out where F1 is going with the seat lottery. We go to Japan for Formula E, where it finally made its debut, and Japan's pretty cool place, have to say. Over to Africa, Kenya for the, what was it? Some safari
rally. World rally.
It should be so dismissive. America, there's always a NASCAR race. There's a bit of an argy-bargy in NASCAR. And it was Easter in the UK, if you celebrate Easter wherever you are in the world. Yeah. And there's plenty of race meetings going on in the UK. And we've just literally, the checkered flag's gone down with a safety car for British GT.
We'll talk about that later.
What are we going to kick off with?
About six tracks had race meetings. It's always Easter's great. Lots of club racing. I think the historics at Castle Coombe. So there's lots of places to go and watch. But yeah, Alton Park was the best. But
I had lots of people at Castle Coombe that I knew, actually. Lots of people there.
Great place. So, the family track. Great place to go and watch motor racing. But yeah, there's not much gossip in Formula One, but it's this great growing debate now. Sainz has now won a Grand Prix. It's now the greatest driver in the world. and where's he going to go? Then, of course, Fernando's the big sneaky little sort of fox in the background, isn't he? Talking quietly behind doors with Aston Martin, maybe Red Bull for him. And everyone's sort of, it's a real weird world at the moment with so much. And I think it all depends on the outcome of Red Bull. I think everyone's waiting, really. So the Red Bull thing's always gone to court again. So everyone's now sort of sitting on their hands thinking, well, if the Red Bull kicks off, you know, Max might be off to Mercedes, Max might be going to Aston Martin, Max might be going to whoever. And so it's a question of working out where we think who is going. Have you got any thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are there should be five, possibly six, if you listen to you, but I disagree with Lance Stroll. But there should be five seats coming up. Ricciardo, Hülkenberg, Magnussen, Bottas and Perez. Now, I say those five because they're the five that I want to go because they've been there, done that, and they're not going to get any better.
So yeah, that's who's going. We agree.
That's what we'd love to see. That's who I'd love to see go. Now, in terms of the merry-go-round of Formula One seats, Carlos Sainz going to Red Bull would be phenomenal for me.
Well, I think it's the big seats we've got to talk about first, really, don't we? So it's first, who's going to Mercedes? So that, everyone's curious. But then Alonso's knocked on the door, and he's also knocked on the door at Aston Martin. But if he's knocking on the door at Aston Martin, that means Alonso's, and that's Alonso as well, isn't it? Alonso's knocking on his own door. It's confusing. I'm trying to work it out myself, but it's too confusing. So I think if Red Bull fall apart, so let's go to that scenario.
Red Bull falls apart. They're not going to fall apart.
Let's go that place first. Okay. Bit of fun. So Max becomes free. I'm leaving Red Bull, taking everyone with me. Which would he choose? Mercedes with Russell.
There's no Ferrari team. That's gone.
Charles. It's really Mercedes, isn't it? But then who goes to Red Bull? So first
Can
we have to decide.
Can you imagine Max
comes out
at Mercedes?
I think he has to go to Mercedes. Say Max, but I think Mercedes is the only place. But then they say that Aston Martin have been talking to him, but Aston Martin wouldn't be a place unless Alonso leaves or they finally drops his golden boy wonder. Which may be the thing. Maybe he's thinking Verstappen, Alonso, Aston Martin. And they're all after Adrian Newey. That's the other equation.
Verstappen's not going to leave Red Bull.
Hold on a minute. We're still talking about that if he did. If Red Bull exploded, Max, I think, would go to McLaren. Or would he go to Aston Martin? Because Newey is the other... Because Max might go where Newey goes. Then Aston Martin are trying to get Newey to come, and so are Mercedes, and so are Ferrari. So say Max stays, and then you think Newey will stay at Red Bull, whatever. Do you think he might be lured to somewhere? So Max stays.
No,
who's going to Mercedes?
It used to be. I mean, we support football, and that's a good analogy there because so many players want to stay with their club forever, whether through. Yeah. thick, thin, good or bad. But then you get the others that are happy to do it every season because they get their money.
More money.
But I think Max, I mean, he doesn't need the money. None of these guys need the money. But I think Max is loyal to Red Bull. I do. I mean, yeah, and he's not going to get the car, the everything, the team, everything that he's had. He's been spoiled with over the last 2 years.
Yeah, but maybe he thinks about 2026. Maybe he thinks Red Bull can't produce an engine that matches the chassis that will be produced for him. Because you see, there's Carlos Sainz is still, we're worried about where Max goes. Then where's Carlos going to go? So Carlos, they say, is going to Sauber because his dad drove for Audi, well, one of Dakar. So the obvious slot for Carlos is to go to Audi Sauber. But Audi Sauber aren't going to have a winning car next year. There's no way they can turn that cash thing into a winner. So he'd have to have a bad year with Sauber if he's going to sign a multi. He could get huge money from Audi, probably. But Carlos would probably want to go to Mercedes or Aston Martin. Oh, no. I'm lost.
So you've already got more money than you can ever spend, and you have the option to go with Mercedes for less money or Sauber, never ever have a chance of getting on the podium for loads of money. I would take Mercedes all day long if you had that option. Yeah,
I think you should seek a smooth operator.
And you're right about what you said about the have they made the right choice, because there's been a lot of talk this weekend about him being better than Charles.
No, I still don't think he's the golden quicker.
Boy. I don't think he is. He's had a bit more luck.
Science could go to Red Bull if they drop Perez. That's another option.
Which is what I've been saying all along. That's what I just said.
Oh, that's your prime. Okay.
That's what I want to happen.
Okay.
So Perez has got to go. Right. Okay. Perez, please.
So let's line up your dream thing. We're putting Science into the Red Bull and Max is staying. Right? Good.
Well, not really. That's not a dream, because I would want Max to go to Sauber, because I don't want Max to.
Well, you just said he's staying. People have switched off by now.
Okay. Max, that's it. Max and Carlos at Red Bull.
Okay.
Lewis and Charles, obviously, at Ferrari.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of seats open. There's lots.
Mercedes. Might Alonso go to Mercedes? But Alonso is pretty happy at Aston Martin because they're beating Mercedes. Alonso's got no reason to leave to go to Mercedes, really, has he?
I think the only thing that might happen with Alonso, possibly, and this is really far-fetched, is Zach Brown's a big motorsport fan. Is he going to want to get Alonso to Mercedes just for, I don't know...
Well, Zach Brown's McLaren.
That's what I mean. Sorry, McLaren. That's what I mean. McLaren.
Yeah, McLaren won't change any drivers. McLaren will keep there too.
And I
think
they've got two
really good drivers. Yeah, they've got two really good drivers.
Yeah. But I'm playing your silly game.
Would Max accept Alonso at Red Bull straight, you know, Sainz to Aston Martin, because Alonso now wants to change yet again, and Alonso gets offered 1 year in a Red Bull alongside Max? I think Alonso would take that.
Well, I would normally say that what's Max got to do with it, but actually I think he's got everything to do with it this time, because this time they are not want. Yeah, absolutely, and he's going to say, look, I want X, Y, and Z. I want Perez to stay for another 10 years.
I think there's going to be a lot of meetings in Japan behind closed doors, in little motorhomes, secretive talks going on with the Grand Prix next weekend.
Yes, yeah, so just a little bit more news in around the world. We might have some lifting and coasting. We don't like it because we're going to go to Formula E shortly, but we don't like lifting and coasting. But 2026 may bring some lifting and coasting in Formula One, the irony is that Alonso was penalised for the George Russell incident last week, and that was lifting off or braking early, whichever way you want to look at it. But there's going to be a lot more of that.
But it's all about the boost, isn't it? It's all, you're all going to be safe because you've got this massive amount. It's 50% electric power, 50% internal combustion engine power. So there's going to be a massive amount of regenning. You're going to be saving. Then you'll go mental down the straight, maybe overtake someone, maybe not. But nobody, that's going to be so artificial. It's going to be worse and worse and worse. I fear. I always hope I'm wrong, because I've loved Formula One since someone could walk. Liberty, talking about Formula One and money. Yep. Liberty buying MotoGP.
$3.5 billion.
I don't think it'll harm MotoGP, funny enough, because they can't go to those sort of temporary street circuits and bikes. It's too dangerous. You've got to be with runoff area and a bit of room on a bike. So I don't think it'll change the tracks, which would be good for the real MotoGP, motorbike spectators, the fans, which I think are getting pushed out of Formula One with the price of tickets. So I think that'll be good for MotoGP in the end. More, you know, I think the awareness they brought to, you know, even drivers at the back of the grid. So they do some good, Liberty. They definitely, you know, have grown our sports coverage around the world. But it's just a shame, I think, of the tracks they drive on and the cars they're driving.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, Tiff, I was just going to say a good point on MotoGP, and I do think it will bring awareness because it's been declining a little bit, I guess, the likes of Rossi, the doctor, leaving and stuff like that. But so hopefully that'll get a little bit of a new audience. Is hopefully not too much razzmatazz, but that's got to be a good thing for MotoGP, that Liberty deal.
Maybe more money to MotoGP teams that can then run Moto2 teams, and maybe we get more British drivers up there, riders. Because again, otherwise it's all Spanish and Italians most of the time.
Good,
but
good for them. Ride to survive 2025. Wait and see.
Anyway, so not much racing over last weekend, but we start in Tokyo. We just mentioned where Formula One goes next year. And as always, I mean, the Japanese are just mad about any racing. So I'm sure there was huge Tokyo, you know, meetings and razzmatazz in town, a lot of interest shown with the Formula E coming. But the race was as dull as ditch. I mean, it comes out of the circuit. I despair. They always talk about, you know, central city racing comes to the heart. All these street tracks are usually, this was a dockside of Tokyo Harbour, you know, so the roads they were using were more sort of industrial dockland roads. Quite bumpy. That's made them quite exciting to watch on the road. It was a nasty little leap into the air coming out. I think it was turn one. But, you know, they put over 20 corners into 1.5 miles. And the first 9 corners were just never-ending string of corners and a couple of straights. And so because it's so twiddly, they can't overtake anywhere, and they just toast and save. And it was the track doesn't work. You've got to get the right sort of track, I think, with Formula E, and this certainly wasn't one. So Oliver Rowland qualified best with Nissan, great for Nissan, and right behind him was Max Gunther in the Maserati. But then with no overtake, Oliver Rowland just led the pack, and they all go around. You know, there was no chaos in the first 9 corners, which you thought there would be. There were a few noses knocked out of joint, as it tends to happen when it was. But everyone was just following Roland's pace. Because Roland was cutting the air, so he didn't get he needed a bit more regen. And the whole thing about Formula E when it's processional, that the whole thing, the race is decided on getting your attack mode. Because you have to go on this wide corner twice in the race to get your attack mode. But all the attack mode means is you lose a place because it's slower. Nobody ever uses their attack mode to attack. I've never seen someone, you know, come out after attack mode and then suddenly drive past the car ahead because they've got more power. Because they know if they do that, they use too much power. So though you have more power available, you can't actually use it, I don't think. Or otherwise, the two Porsches were quite clever because they ended up being fifth and sixth in the middle of the race. So the sixth place Porsche driver backed up the people behind him. So the fifth place Porsche had a 2-second gap ahead of him, so he could do the attack mode and not lose a place. And that's the whole race is around the attack mode. And in fact, Oliver Rowland did a brilliant job because for his two attack modes, he used some more power to sprint to 1.5-second lead to do the attack mode without losing his position. But the problem is he did use a bit too much power doing that. So the Maserati, they're first and second, like the whole race, because nobody would overtake anywhere. So Max Gunther had been sitting behind Roland the whole race and got one attack mode done. And still had an attack mode to go. So in theory, you know, Roland leading and the person behind him having to another attack mode, he had the race in the bag. But he just used too much power. And eventually he had to just pull over and let him pass, which looked a bit naff. There was no overtake the lead. It was like he just pulled to the side. I'm not sure quite. And the problem was he couldn't keep going at that pace without running out of power at the end. But I think he hoped he could stay with the plan to stay with Gunther. So when Gunther did take the final attack mode, Roland would get past the lead. But Gunther pulled out a 2 or 3 second lead and was able to take his final attack mode without getting overtaken by Roland. So
so maybe they should change the name attack mode to loser place mode.
Lose a place. But it is bizarre. He's not going to take his attack mode. They will say it with such excitement, the attack mode. The attack mode is the loser place mode, as you just said.
I'm off to Formula E in Monaco. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to
that. It's a better track because that has got more flow. You know, it's finding that balance between the tracks are too open, like the one in America where they drove around five abreast, all saying, please overtake me, please overtake me. No, Portland, where they're going again, you know. And then the two twisty circuits, like the Tokyo track, where there's no way to overtake. You know, just people just slow, 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 and then they get to the straight, they use a bit of power, so they can't overtake. So Jake Dennis did, he got from fifth to third, about the only driver that really did anything. He was battling with the Porsche a lot. There was a bit of dodgy overtaking attempts that got firmly put in the wall. So there was some entertainment, but basically it was just this long stream of cars going round and round and round and waiting for the attack mode chess game to be played. Sorry, Formula E.
Well, I mean, even worse than that is in Abu Dhabi coming up is the autonomous race that's coming up.
April. I keep on putting that date. I've got to see. Have you learned anything about it? I don't know what speed they can have one car on the track. I know.
It's an RC. It's a remote controlled race. That's
race,
all it is.
I know. I just know.
I don't get it. Josh Joe's mate. He's been out there for months with them. Months.
Oh, really?
He's an ex McLaren pit stop guy. So he's been out there.
So what's his job? What's he working on? The chassis or the?
No, nothing like that. He's not there for the brains. He's there for the raw. So he'll be doing the tires and stuff like Jack's, maybe, I don't know, but he'll be proper sort of hands-on pit crew. But so maybe they're going to have pit stops as well.
Where are they racing anyway? I've forgotten.
Abu Dhabi, Yas Marina. Yeah.
Autonomous, whatever next. Oh,
I don't get it. We'll wait and see.
But back to a real sport, the World Rally Championship, that's dropping its hybrid cars next year. But the Safari Rally is so tough. I mean, it was a spectacle. I mean, again, it always is. It's always a problem, as I said. You know, it's wonderful. The skills they use, the speed they're going, and the dust is flying, the leap in the air. But in the end, the race all comes down to watching a stopwatch end. You know, and so you haven't got that, you know, racing side by side.
It's so dramatic, beautiful scenery. Yeah. You've got giraffes running around and the cars going through.
Leaping everywhere. But there were punctures galore. It was a rough old track. And again, that's the problem with rallying. You know, it depends. It's a lottery who gets the punctures. But it is funny. I don't know quite how they avoid them, but quite often the guy up the front, the talent, the Loeb or the Sabet Ogier, or now the child, Reverend Pera, don't get punctures. And how they can be that lucky, or is it because they literally don't go quite as wide? They're keeping, you know, with 90% of their limits. They can drive a little bit within their limits and still be fast, whereas the chasing pack are getting a bit loose. I don't know why.
More ragged. But I thought Elgin they swept Evans. The course. I thought the front ones.
And that's when it's gravelly. Your sweeping is bad. You know, if you're out front when it's that loose surface, then that's great to go fifth or sixth or seventh on the road, because then you arrive, but you've still got a nice firm track then. But it's when the big rocks get kicked out, when people cut the corners. The punctures. I mean, poor, you know, Elfyn Evans had about three punches in one day, I think. You know, just so he was out of contention. And it's a shame when contenders are so out. But basically, Hyundai had a poor weekend. There were bad reliabilities. Last year, that was always their problem. Didn't quite have the reliability. This year, we thought it was getting better. But they lost Escobar Galappi on the first day. I think he had a gearbox problem. And then both the other Hyundais had punctures and all sorts going on. Thierry Neuville ended up fifth, I think, and Octanek was eighth. So they had a bad weekend. So Calle Rovanpera just didn't get punches. This is part-time Rovanpera, the world champion. Now, his Toyota teammate Takumoto Katsuta came second. And then, as I said, poor old Elfyn had so many punches. I think he finished... he was fourth, wasn't he, with all his punctures. So there was nobody was close, all minutes apart. But the great news for Britain was the Gus Greensmith story, because he's come back to WRC2 again with his Skoda, and he's battling against Oliver Solberg, also in a Skoda. And Oliver's this, you know, really quick lad that had a year in WRC, and I think he'll be coming back for sure. But Solberg had punctures early on, or one, I think, and then he was just chasing Gus for the whole rally, gradually getting clawing him back. But he only got within 1.5 minutes, and Gus drove a tremendous rally. And he was sixth overall, you know, with all the top boys going. You know, I've missed out Formo, of course. When I was trying to work out where Elfyn finished in fourth, I'd forgotten about another great finish for Ford, with that Adrian Formo going third again. So good news for Ford. Formo kept it steady, tried to avoid the punches, getting out of trouble, didn't go mad, and got the deserved third place. But Auguste was being chased by mad by Solby. He was chased also by a bad tummy that was causing him to go to the toilet quite often, and was a bit worried he'd run out of time going on a stage. So he wasn't well on the Saturday. But it was a great win because Oliver was, you know, pressuring him, but couldn't quite do it. But, you know, you look at the difference when you get down to WRC2. Solberg was 1.5 minutes behind Greensmith. In third place, the Polish guy, his my pronunciation, apologies again, Ajetan Kajanowski was third, 8.5 minutes behind Greensmith. It was that tough a rally, you know, so it did spread the pack apart. It's a spectacular photo, spectacular filming, but not very close competition and a sort of lottery of who got the more punctures.
Before we go on to wherever we go next, I don't know where this came from. The toilet breaks and getting in and out of the car with your harnesses on. I was watching Ford Ferrari, went to my family's place on the weekend, and they had that on the background. And back in the day, did they not even wear seatbelts? But when they used to do the running start at Le Mans, they used to run and jump in the car and drive off.
Well, they didn't race with seatbelts until about 68, 69, 70.
Seatbelts.
Well, it was still the old, but the little old Grand Prix cars, they wanted to get thrown out. Fire was their biggest terror. That's what everyone was terrified. So many drivers died in these horrendous fires.
Right.
So they wanted to get thrown out. When things rolled, they wanted to get spat out the top. That was always what they thought of. I remember it was Nathan Gregory, I think, someone I saw it was a kid at Goodwood, the other main straight down to the Woodcut corner, the final corner.
Yeah.
We had complete brake failure. And so he was just going straight on. And so he stood on the seat. So he got his legs out. So when he hit the earth bank, he shot out the top like a cannonball man.
Wow.
I mean, funny you say that.
There's a fight. Well, he didn't die. But there's a viral clip.
No, he didn't die.
This weekend, a new Toyota SUV driving down the beach gets a rut.
Yes, saw it.
And he flips out, and then actually the guy comes out of the window. A lot of the Arabs, so I'm not generalizing here, but I have a lot of Arab friends, they don't wear seatbelts because they think when it's their time, it's their time. And it blew him out as well. That's a genuine video.
I've seen a couple of those. If you go, there's also those videos that when they go down the highway to this 90 mile an hour, you know, tank slapper, drifting one with the other. And I've seen a few of those where they've been up in the sand. I've seen them come out through the windows.
Oh, horrific. So, but some of them, they don't normally end as well when it's on tarmac as opposed to in a nice bit of water and sand. But there you go.
Gus Greensmith gets our Driver of the Weekend award without a shadow of a doubt. Well done, Gus. We then go off to America for NASCAR. The weekly NASCAR. Another boring. Another one I'm glad you didn't watch, maybe.
I watched the highlights, and I watched the bit of argy-bargy at the end.
Well, the highlights was the last two laps. The only interesting thing was it started with wet tyres. And I thought it was the first time, but I think they have done it once before. It was only a 3/4 mile oval, not too banked. So they've now got wet tyres.
Where was it? Sorry, Tiff.
It was Richmond, the 3/4 mile Richmond Virginia track. The five, Larson was on pole and led in the wet with his brilliant driving skills, but didn't seem to have the speed on the car when it dried out. But there were hardly any cautions, 400 laps. And there was one spin, I think, earlier on when someone got tapped, and then Kyle Busch sort of shouldered the wall, didn't do much damage. They threw the yellows because they like to throw the yellows in NASCAR to get some exciting racing going. But it didn't really make it more exciting. And it was a real drawn-out race. Martin Truex Jr. was out front, three laps to go. Drive you mad if you're an NASCAR driver, thinking about the champagne, but knowing if the caution came, he'd have to do a restart and decide whether to go to the pits to change tyres. But Kyle Larson had been struggling a bit, didn't have the speed. He led for quite a while, but not in the dry. He was tapped into a spin by Bubba Wallace. Bubba was trying to take fourth place off him with about two laps to go. Tapped the back of car. Kyle had a big slide. Yellows came out. They all dive into the pits. And Dirty Den's brilliant team crew got his four wheels changed quicker than Martin Truex's team and emerged in the lead. So Dirty Den, I don't think he led a lap for the whole race. So it was a boring 400 laps. And now we had the usual NASCAR, you know, crowd-pleasing green-white checker. The two laps to go to the end. And first of all, everybody reckoned Dirty Den jumped the restart because they come slowly into the restart zone and it's about 50 yards long. I'm probably wrong, but someone will come up with the right number. And you can't go until you're in it. You've got to go before it ends. but the driver, the lead driver, has that choice. So Hamlin was on the inside. And I reckon he definitely squirted the throttle. His car wasn't in the box, which pissed off Truex quite a bit. And so Truex was now getting upset because it was a race he had won. And now he's got Hamlin ahead of him. Then he, so he hung around the outside, half around the outside, around turns one and two, Truex did. And then Hamlin, dirty dead, did what he did to the Carl Larson and other people. Just moved him up the hill on the way out, headed him towards the wall, giving him the choice of either hitting the wall or backing out. So, Dirty Den then went on to win easily, having done the dirty trick. It actually let through Joey Logano to second place. So now, poor old Martin Truex had Carl Larson challenging him, which now he's right pissed off. And I don't know what he thought Larson did to him, but anyway, going down the back straight on the last lap, he just came down and slammed into the side of Larson's car, which you might have seen on the highlights.
Yeah,
and then Larson going through the car last corner decided he was going to put Truex back up the hill, and so then Larson pushed Truex and got across the line about 2 inches ahead. And then after the finish line, Truex first we caught Hamlin up, gave a couple of taps up the bumper, and then backed off. Then he put Larson in the wall again. Oh, it was all kicking off.
But nothing happens. They don't get reprimanded.
No, drivers sort it out themselves. I mean, if it's really outrageous, they do reprimand. But in general, it's what goes round comes round.
What?
You tack me.
When you say outrageous, do you think that it's outrageous when you pull off your rear bumper and throw it at a car? Do you think that's outrageous?
Well, or
do you
not only because the driver's putting himself. They don't like drivers now walking to that horrible accident, the midget race, the dirt race, when Tony Stewart hit some kid that ran down into.
Joe Gassi didn't he just do that? He chucked his entire rear bumper.
Yeah, so he'll get something from NASCAR. They won't do him off.
Well, he's got to. He's chucking his at the windscreen.
It was a good shot. Crowds
it was it. A good shot.
Normally, they throw the crash hat. It's quite a popular one, but they are cutting down. I think they will get stricter on drivers going down to have hand signals and throw things at drivers that have been upsetting them. That was Joey Gase. Joey Gase. So it does go on. But anyway, so a very exciting three laps and a very boring 397. And there was some good side-by-side. There was lots of side-by-side. You know, I mean, Carl Larson, the first 10 laps, had Bubba Wallace squeezing him. So I mean, there's a lot of tension and side-by-side racing going on.
But it is amazing to watch 5 minutes here and 5 minutes here.
It's a times 30 thing. NASCAR, well, I recommend you watch it. It's got to be a Sky Sports times 30 or whatever other medium you can get to. It's TNT. What's it on? It's not on Sky Sports. It's on TNT, it's called now, or premium that it was. So, so that was all worldwide. Not that much going on. Back home, as we said, you know, there were races all over the place. And Alton Park.
The weather spoils.
It was disappointing. And again, it's safety, isn't it? Safety. I know we have to have safety, but the two GT races were so spoilt by safety cars. They got their own version of VSC, and they will go around. They have to go
full
50 miles an hour.
FCY.
Yeah, but instead of doing the sort of sectors, which Formula One has, so they can just still go quite quick in a virtual safety car, the Grand Prix drivers can still keep heat in their tyres. But when they go full course in the GT cars, they're 50 miles an hour. So they have to end, as far as I've seen, I'm not sure, a full course yellow with a pace car, because otherwise you can't let them all suddenly go because I don't know. Maybe they could have suddenly let them go, but there was too much of it. And of course, the race we've just come away from, the last 15 minutes was full course yellow and they cruised across the line in the order. But they got to get everything safe. I'd leave the cars if they're in a reasonably safe place. And if you go off and hit it, well, you go off and hit it. I know you can't. As long as marshals aren't there. But I do think there are times when a car fairly well off where most people wouldn't go off, you know, million to one, broken down engine on a straight, you know, but he's pulled off and he's up against the barrier and is quite, you know, I sometimes think you can leave a car there, then get the low loader out and another 10 minutes of safety car. So the racing wasn't as good. It's always spectacular, Alton Park, but in the rain, it's very hard to race tight and close because it's, you know, it's a very tricky track. But it's always
very
spectacular.
Tricky, yeah.
Great to watch. And of course, it was great, of course, because both the races are run by Lamborghini and run by a team that, what do they call it? Oh, Barwell Motorsport.
I thought your brother was a team principal, but they interviewed someone else as a team principal.
No, that's Mark Lemmer is the team principal. Right. Commercial director. Chris has to deal with all the sponsors and all the drivers' sponsors and the drivers' dads and the drivers' stuff. So Yeah, Barwon won, and it was great because the Collards won the first race. They had the great thing of the 2 1-hour races. The amateur does qualifying for one race and starts that race, and the pro does qualifying for the other race and starts that race. And you have to change halfway through. So the first race was the AM starters, where Rob got pole position and led all the way and handed over to son Ricky for the second half of the race. But then that came out under the full course yellow safety car procedure. And we had they went to full Formula One Abu Dhabi spec because it was a nightmare. And the commentators noticed that Ricky had dropped way back from the pace car. The pace car's lights are still on, and the rule book says you've got to stay within 5 car lengths. So off they went, and everyone was saying, you know, under inspection, you know, restart. And so all the other teams were thinking, well, it's got to be a penalty. We've all seen it's a slam dunk. And then the organizer, about 6 laps to go, announced a 30-second penalty. And then about 3 laps later, they said, penalty reduced, taken away, no penalty. Now, you can't change a decision or make it, you know, because everybody's now backed off. So yeah. It was Phil Keane, second of the Mercedes, who
you,
eased you, back
you push. You, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Don't he worry about him, he's got 10 seconds.
Yeah. So it was a full muck up. But I mean, what happened was they found out that there was a glitch in the pace car lights. So halfway around the lap, the pace car lights went off. So Collard backed away then because he wanted the Formula One style starts. He was making the space in front of him, you know. So, and the pace car then disappeared. He couldn't see it anymore. But then the lights apparently came back on again. So the shot that everyone saw on the television with pace car lights on, no Collard, no Collard, no Collard. And then he appears. So you're saying, well, he's, you know, he hasn't stayed within 5 car lengths. So that's what the confusion was.
I thought the commentary was very good.
They are excellent commentators. Yeah, good commentary, a lot of information.
Very knowledgeable.
And not too shouty or anything else. Correct. And of course, the cars
look fantastic as well.
The other Lamborghini
one.
Yeah. Where Sandy Mitchell, the pro, put it on pole position, then 2 pole positions, one in the AM, one in the pros. And Ricky Collard only qualified about 5th, I think, and they finished 5th or 4th. So Sandy Mitchell and his AM, Alex Martin, had a good run to the finish. So all joy for the Nidell family, but not as spectacular as I'd hoped. But motor racing isn't always.
Parker Racing, I know Sam Parker, they did very well as well.
They got GT4, of course, which I think Jaguar won, Aston Martin won the first race, and Mercedes won the second race. So it was all good stuff, but not as good as it could have been. And not forgetting, in the support race, our own Pan. Forget about Pan. I lost my notes now. Alicia Palmowski, a 17-year-old British girl in her single-seater debut in the GB4 race from second on the grid, won her first single-seater race.
Amazing.
So we may have Pan going good, the French Pan, who's still brilliant, we still support. But we now have a British female driver, 17-year-old Alicia Palmowski. So there you go. We've also...
And a shout-out to Megan Bruce as well is in that race. Bear in mind, she hasn't done any racing. She did Caterham Academy... Caterham Academy, and she finished 12th in the second race. Did very, very well. Tricky conditions. Right. So good on Megan.
And this is where, if we are going to have a female Formula One driver in 5, 6, 10 years' time, this is what they have to do. They have to get into mainstream single-seater racing and beat everybody, which Alicia did. Well done, Alicia. But not quite.
Jess Hawkins, you didn't mention her.
She's in the second class of GT3. She's in a pro-am and silver. There's different classes. I think they were at the back, I'm afraid. I think she was 6th in the class of 6, finishing about 17th, 16th. I didn't see her result actually the second race. Not sure where she was. But she was on the pace. Her time was good. You know, she was on the back of the pack, as it were. So she'll get, because she hardly done any testing in that car. You know, so it's a brutal thing. So at least you get second place in our Driver of the Weekend behind Gus.
I'll give her first place, personally.
Next weekend, what's the time? I've got to go and watch the football. My Southampton kick off in 5 minutes' time. We've got 5 minutes now. We're going live. Just the Japanese Grand Prix, obviously huge. Another circuit, though, that, you know, I would redesign and I raced it so many times. Wonderful track. On your own, it's a wonderful, wonderful track, but there's nowhere to overtake. And then they eased 130 yards. Wonderful corner.
So why is it wonderful for you racing and not for the Formula One car?
Because you couldn't go flat through it. You right. couldn't go flat out through it. And that is the problem right. with Eau Rouge at Spa, 130 hour Blanche thingy at Spa.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to change, you've got to have these circuits. As soon as everyone's flat, in my book, you slow the cars down. You don't chase the circuit at all. And you don't sort of, you know, help them all round. If you're not full throttle, or if you are full throttle in some of these corners, we've got to slow the cars down. Because otherwise, you know, you can go through 130 hour, come out 3 miles an hour faster, and you have, you know, get a bit of an overlap and overtake. Because when I raced there, there was no chicane. So even more important, 130 hour, because if you came out 2 or 3 miles an hour faster, you went flat out through a crested right-hander, and then you're down past the pits, you're already pulling alongside before the corner at the end. And of course, you will see overtaking in Japan, but it's only when the guys got better tyres so they can get the traction out of the chicane and the DRS, do they then get to go by down past the pits and into turn one. But spectacular watch, but just very, very hard to overtake. I mean, occasionally you get an overtake at the spoon corners, but again, normally it will require a dive at the hairpin maybe. But a good track. I mean, qualifying can be really interesting because these McLarens, you know, have got a lot of high-speed grip. It's a high-speed flowing corner circuit. And if Max, you know, then I haven't quite got the Red Bull in its best groove at the moment, I don't think. So I think it's really looking forward to the qualifying.
That's a ridiculous thing to say. They have one slip-up in, like, 120 races.
He wasn't quite on the pace. There was still a lot of rumours. Ferrari was saying we would have beaten Red Bull even if he'd been in a full race. We'd have outplayed
them. The question for you is, who is going to finish in front out of Charles and Carlos?
Charles out-qualified Carlos at Suzuka. He's a quick driver.
Who will finish in front? Who's going to finish? So
depend on Ferrari's strategy going correctly.
It's a simple question.
Okay, Leclerc this time. Leclerc will be ahead of Sainz. Okay. I'm going for a McLaren win. I'm going. This is it. This is Lando's chance.
Poor old Lando. He's been bridesmaid quite a few times, hasn't he? He's due a win, but it's with Max there. It's just so you need luck with Max.
Well, Ricardo winning at Monza about 3 years ago, whatever it was.
Oh,
I mean, Lando must have been gutted. I mean, Daniel had been nowhere, and he was nowhere after he won at Monza. But he just happened to have the right strategy, and he was quick as Lando at that one weekend. So yeah, the Lando win. So we've just got Japan to watch, which will be, when we wake up Sunday morning, you'll go to the recording and watch it, because it'll happen in the middle of the night. That'll be Sunday morning. Then Sunday evening, you can watch the NASCAR boys, which might be good, might be bad, around the half-mile Martinsville. There will be bumping and boring around the half-mile track, so there should be entertainment. But as always, motorsport's always entertaining. There's always good bits to look at, bad bits, boring bits. I'm testing at Goodwood tomorrow. I'm off to Goodwood to test a Ford Mustang in preparation for the members' meeting in April. So,
are you? That's early, isn't it? I thought it's going to be.
It's this month. I think now.
Wow, it's an earlier meeting. So quickly. I'm in Italy with Lamborghini next week. Imola, actually. So,
Is this a new model launch or testing a race car or what?
There is a new model that I can't disclose at the moment.
They're kicking off. 1 minute to kick off.
I got to tell you, they gave me a list, say which cars you want to drive around Imola, and they gave from the 400 GT, Miura SV, Countach 25th anniversary, Diablo SE, Michelago, and so on and so forth. And I said, well, can I just drive all the... And then they had all the Huracans and stuff, which are phenomenal.
Diablo. Manual Diablo.
And I said, can I drive each one of the V12s, please? So there you go. So that coming to your screens soonish, V12s around Imola.
And what a track. Have you driven around the track?
Oh, no, I'm going to get on the PlayStation or something.
No, I thought you said Mugello is the place you should have got. Imola is all chicanes and not so exciting. Good. Happy Christmas. Come on, you Saints. This is it. We're going to beat Ipswich. We're going to turn the season round.
Top of the table clash, almost top of the table. Thanks for watching. See you next week. Cheers.